And then at the age of about 15 or 16, I discovered Darwinian evolution and realized that the one remaining argument for believing in a God, which was the argument from design, the beauty of living things, was blown out of the water. So then I became a proper atheist.
Did you hear that? Richard is saying that the only argument that you have for the existence of God is blown out of the water by Darwinian evolution. Okay, so I put on a little show to show you the instinctive response of a theist when he hears evolution from an atheist. The instinctive response is that I need to blow evolution out of the water in order to prove that my God really exists. So you can relax. I'm going to show you why you don't need to do that. I'm going to show you why evolution does not disprove the existence of God. Richard's argument against the existence of God comes out of a uniquely Christian context. Richard is critiquing the argument from design, which was famously made by the 18th century Christian clergyman and Christian apologist William Paley, who argued that just as the design in a watch is evidence for a watchmaker, the intricate design in the living things that we see in the universe is evidence for a designer, and that designer is God. Guys, this is going to come as a surprise to many of you, but the argument from design is not a good argument for the existence of God. Because it's not a good argument for the existence of God, it's vulnerable to a number of sound critiques that can be made of it by evolutionary biologists like Richard Dawkins. Here's what the argument from design looks like. It's a modus ponens argument. Modus ponens means affirming the antecedent. A modus ponens argument consists of a conditional premise. The conditional premise in this case looks like this. It says that if the design in living things cannot be made by natural processes, then it must have been made by a supernatural being. The first premise is a conditional statement, if then. The first part of the conditional statement is called the antecedent. The second part is called the consequent. A modus ponens argument affirms the antecedent. So the second premise affirms the antecedent by saying that the design in living things cannot be explained, cannot be made by natural processes. And that takes us to the conclusion that the design in living things must have been the handiwork of a supernatural being. An evolutionary biologist like Richard is going to critique the second premise of this argument. He or she will argue that there is a natural process that can explain the design in living things. That natural process is called evolution by natural selection. Because of evolution, the second premise falls apart. Because the second premise falls apart, the argument collapses, and evolution has blown the argument for the existence of God out of the water. Now, I want you to see that a Christian theist who wants to defend this argument can only do so by attacking evolution. Remember that? So he's going to gear up and he's going to attack the theory of evolution and blow the theory of evolution out of the water to prove the existence of his God. This is why evolution is at the heart of debates surrounding the existence of God today. Many Muslims who see this happening want to jump into the argument onto the side of the Christian theists. They want to attack evolution and resurrect the second premise. And by resurrecting the second premise, they want to put the argument for the existence of God back on the table. But that's a mistake. This entire debate is wrong. Evolution has absolutely nothing to do with the argument for the existence of God, because design has nothing to do with the argument for the existence of God. I'm going to show you a uniquely Muslim contribution to this debate. I'm going to show you that the crucial premise in this argument is not the second premise, but the first premise. The first premise is flawed. Let me show you the flaw in the first premise by asking a question. Let's forget about design. Let's forget about living things. Let's take a rock. Let's say that this rock has no design. Can this rock, it's not a living thing, it's not designed, let's just assume it's not designed, can this rock be explained by natural processes? It cannot, because it is contingent. And that's the problem with the first premise. The first premise assumes that you need design in living things, because in non-living things like rocks, you don't see design as clearly. So you need design in living things in order to prove the existence of God. But you don't. If living things or non-living things were not designed, they would still need God, because they are contingent. Design has nothing to do with the dependency of the universe on a necessary being, on God. Remember the line of dominoes from the previous episode? Remember how when we look at everything in the universe, we see that it needs something else to make it the way that it is. Remember how a scientist who explains one thing in the universe with reference to another thing in the universe is like somebody who is stacking one domino over another domino, which is then stacked over another domino, over another one, over another one, over another one. Remember how all the way at the end, there needs to be someone, something who is holding everything in existence, keeping everything the way that it is. Otherwise, the dominoes would all fall down. Otherwise, everything would cease to exist. Remember the argument from contingency? The universe is evidence for the existence of God, not because it's designed. The universe, whether a living thing with design or whether a rock, is evidence for the existence of God because it is contingent. The things in the universe don't need to be designed to be evidence for the existence of God. The universe is evidence for the existence of God even without design. Let's return to the argument from design. Let's correct the first premise. Instead of talking about design and living things, we're going to talk about contingency and all kinds of things. The first premise becomes everything that exists contingently needs a necessary being to make it exist. That's the thing that is holding up the line of dominoes right at the end. Otherwise, they would all be lying flat on the ground. The second premise, too, can be modified, should be modified. It's no longer about whether or not a natural process can explain design. The second premise is a simple observation that everything in the universe exists contingently. Everything in the universe, I look at it, I say, what made it the way that it is? And I search for something that will make it the way that it is. This is no longer a modus ponens argument. It's a simple argument that in the terminology of the classical logicians is called a simple syllogism. All A is B, all B is C, therefore all A is C. Everything in the universe needs a necessary being to make it exist. You now understand why we don't need design to prove the existence of God. And that means that you also understand why evolution does not disprove the existence of God. Because the whole point of evolution undermining arguments for the existence of God was that evolution is a non-God explanation for the existence of design in the universe. What I've just shown you entails something else as well. It entails that not only is evolution not an argument against God, but in fact, evolution is an argument for the existence of God. Surprised? Join me in the next episode, and I'll show you why.